said to broadly contextualize and refocus people's conception of Lashonara. So in the first week, I tried to broaden it by pointing out that speech ethics is not just about Lashonara. Speech ethics is about the whole notion of what it is that one is supposed to say. What is one supposed to say and what is one not supposed to say via the Rambam scheme, in which there are five types of speech, two of which are good types of speech, two of which are not bad types of speech, etc. In the second week, we talked about Nibul Peh and tried to put the broader notion of, first of all, when are prohibitions of speech designed to change what we think about, and rather just ways of, right, when is there a legitimate difference between what one is thinking about and what one is saying, and also about how speech is a way of categorizing things properly so that there's the sacred and the profane, so there's some things that are too sacred to talk about and some things too profane to talk about, and mostly often it's in context and to talk about the profane as if it were sacred. In the third week, we talked about Anatma, the purpose being about how to affect flows of information about people, whereas the prohibition of Anatmarim is about how to talk to people, and that the focus of Lashon Hara, using the definition of the Rambam, tend to make us think almost exclusively about talking about people as opposed to talking to people. And as a way of framing that, we show that the Rambam takes on Advarim, right, which is a speech that oppresses others to their face, and moves it into a wholly different category of, it shows up in a backward of Halakha and by the laws of Binyan, as opposed to all the laws of Lashon Hara. So what I'll do this week is take on Lashon Hara directly. What I'm going to do this week is teach you a primary sugya, and then I will teach you the most conventional way of teaching of Lashon Hara, and then we'll look at them together and say, does this fit? If we come to the conclusion, as I suspect we will, that they don't fit well together at all, then we're going to go through a number of alternate conceptions of what Lashon Hara is actually about, and having done that, we'll try and explain how it is that these varying theories came about, and then have some basis for integrating that perhaps. Okay, so here's the sugya. I will start with the Gemara Arachin, Tetvav and the Pit. The sugya goes, well, Heifei Dami Lishna Bisha. Okay, what is a case of Lashon Hara? Lishna Bisha is just the Aramaic translation of Lashon Hara. So either Rava or Rava says, and we'll see later why it matters. The truth is, either Rava or Rava said, that if you go into Amar, he can nur a bait line. It's if you say there's a fire in so-and-so's house. It doesn't mean that so-and-so's house is on fire. It means that so-and-so's house has a barbecue going, where their stove is on. And the question is, so what? Right? If I say so-and-so has a dishwasher, so-and-so has a radiator, a sink, or what difference does it make that there's a fire in the house? That's what Amar Le'Avaya. Avaya says, he's just telling you something that's there. What's the big deal? And it's not clear that Abaye's point isn't obvious, but it's important to discuss whether the next line is Abaye saying, oh, you're wrong and this is what you have to say instead, or alternatively, if Rava or Rava is telling Abaye, well, that's not what I meant at all. But somebody says now, you said it in a manner of Lashon Hara, the Amar, Heifa mishtaka nura el bayt panya. What we say is, where could a fire be found if not in so and so's house? Ika bistra vekavri, where there is meat and fish. So you make some kind of comment that seems to imply that is a house where they're always eating. Now that too is like, what's wrong if it's a house where they're always eating? There's always food. You walk in as a guest, you get food.
They're not learning.
I suppose they're not learning. I mean, because they're not eating all the
learning.
They're rich.
All the things I've ever said
is that there were indications that they were gluttons. They were gluttons. So it's implying that they were gluttons. You can say that. Although, where there is meat and fish, I don't know if that necessarily classifies you as a glutton. I don't know. Okay, then we get to Amar Rava. So here Rava said, Kol milsa de misamra ba'apei mara, anything which is said to the face of the person you are speaking about, less the rishon lishna bisha, that is not a violation of Lashon Hara. So Amar Le, so somebody, perhaps a bayi, perhaps not, depending whether you think this is a continuation of the previous dialogue, says, Kol shekin, chutz b'lishna bisha. You say it to his face, it's both chutzpah and lashon hara. So Amar Leih, he says, no, I'm not Rabbi Yossi, really. I hold like Rabbi Yossi. The Amar Rabbi Yossi said, Miyamai lo amarti davar v'chazarti l'achorai. All my days I have never said something and turned around. Okay, we're left wondering, what does it mean? Who cares? They ever turned around. Why should that make a difference? Okay, onward. Amar Rabba Bar Rahuna. Now Rabba Bar Rahuna comes along, who may or may not be the same person as Rabba in line 9. Who may or may not be the same person as the person who was either Rabba or Rabba in line 2. And he says, Kol Milsa V'Amra V'Apet Flasa Lesa L'Shom Lish L'Bisha. Anything said before 3 does not violate Lashon Hara. My Tamra Chavra Chavra Islay V'Chavra D'Chavra Chavra Islay. Because your friend has a friend and your friend's friend has a friend. Okay, that's the sugya. Before we even think about what this sugya means, I want to read to you what I think is the standard presentation of Hilchot Lashon Hara, which is, of course, the Chofetz Chaim. And let's see what the Chofetz Chaim says about the sugya. Asur l'saser lashon hara al chavero, it is forbidden to speak lashon hara about your friend, afshu hu amet, even though it is true, afilu b'fnei yachid, even before one person, l'chol shekein b'fnei rabbi, and all the more so in front of many people, for example, 3. L'chol she yisrabu ha-shomim, and the more people listen, yisrabu ha-bona m'saper, the worse the sin is, b'fnei shechavero mitganei yotre al yidei zeh, because his friend is humiliated more through this, because now his shame is publicized before more people. And this also trips up a whole bunch of people in the prohibition of listening to Lashon Hara. And this, says the Chofetz Chaim, is Haskamat Kol HaPosukim. This is the universal halachic position. Now, some of you are probably wondering, but isn't this against the Gemara? Well, the Gemara said, anything said before three is not Lashon Hara. And here the Chofetz Chaim comes along and says that anything said before 3 is worse, 3 times as bad as something said in front of 1. Kal v'chomer in front of 9 people or 12 people or whatever other multiples you want. Now, I remember, I first learned this in 11th grade. And we spent a month going through the Chofetz Chaim, I think, at least. And we were learning Bava Basra at the time, but the last line only appears in the city. Anything said before 3, and we learned all the Chofetz Chaim, Lamdas, and all that. And at the end of it, my Rebbe, Rebbe Shlomo Danziger, as we closed our Gemaras for the last time of this sugya, looked at us and said, "But maybe anything you say to 3 people is mutter." And that was the end of the sugya. After all the Chofetz Chaim's attempts to convince him that what he said, but at the end, I read the sugya, and what can I say? I think. Anything said in front of 3 people is mutter. But why should it be? Why should it be? Right? Because Chaim's logic, not his reason, right? Chaim doesn't tell you yet here, right? We'll see in a moment how he reads it. But because Chaim's logic seems inarguable. How can it be otherwise that saying Lashon Hara in front of 3 people, that should be 3 times as bad as saying Lashon Hara in front of 1 person? On the other hand, how on earth could the Chofetz Chaim read the Gemara? Gemara said, Kol Milsim is Amrei Ba'apei Plasa, less than Mishul Mishnevisha. Before you try it, nobody, this the first time is absolutely, in a sense, as I would say, Ashkamas Kol HaPoskim, nobody has ever poskimed against that line. Right? The easy way to say is that, let's find another Gemara somewhere that disagrees with that. Nobody ever, so far as I can tell in halachic history, has ever suggested that we poskim against that line. So, and the first time says that he's calling Ashkamas Kol HaPoskim. So how can we square a universally accepted Gemara that says anything said in front of 3 is not Lashon Hara, with the statement of the Chofetz Chaim, anything said in front of 3 is 3 times as bad as anything said in front of 1. So there are 2 strategies that can be adopted. And the Chofetz Chaim adopts both of these approaches. The first, if you turn the page, is found in Tosfot in Arachim. The first we're skipping is just the same Gemara in Arachim, with a list of questions that when you go back later you can look and see how it's so good can be pulled apart. The Tosfos Arachin says the following. Kol milsa de misamre ba'apei flasa, less ba mishum lishtabisha. Anything said in front of 3 is not Lashon Hara. Pirush, the explanation of this is, as for example, things like stating there's a house in so-and-so's, there's a fire in so-and-so's house. The ikil mishnah, the lo amra mishum lishtabisha, about which you can say that it was not said because of Lashon Hara. Avalim Omer Davar Kantur Al Kavero, but if you say something that is designed deliberately to attack your friend, Afilo Yomer B'Fanavi Mishul Lishna Bisha, then it would be forbidden even to his face. So what Tosfos does is, he takes, right, he says that the, if we go back to page one, what he says is that line 15, which says anything said in front of three should be, right, is not a violation of the position of Yisha, should be read in the context of lines 7 and 8. Right, meaning anything of the form, anything of the form, that where would there be a fire other than in somebody else's house, can be said in front of three. Why? Because since it's ambiguous, and because we have a presumption that people don't really want to say Lashon Hara, therefore the audience will understand it. Will understand it as meaning something positive, as in so-and-so is really generous and always, right, and always puts on food whenever guests come, as opposed to reading it as so-and-so are blessed. Okay, so that's the, right, that is, Tosfos's reading of the sugya is that nobody ever addressed the question in this sugya of real Lashon Hara. The only thing they talked about were statements that could possibly be misunderstood as Lashon Hara, and such statements can be said in front of three people. Now, the Shita Mekubetzet there says something which will become important later, so I'm just going to note it now, and we're going to come back to it later. The Shita Mekubetzet says that, no, Tosfos didn't say this about line 14. Tosfos really said this about line 10. Tosfos didn't really say it about saying in front of three people, he really said it about saying to people's face. At the people's face, you can say things that are ambiguous. Now, Tosfos did say explicitly that if it were to somebody's, right, that if it were deliberately an attack, you couldn't even say it to somebody's face. So they should have said that really he was only telling you that he was talking about to your face the whole time. And really, Tosfos never tells you the context of something said in front of three. Okay, Shinigretz ends up claiming that this whole thing of Tosfos, as opposed to the Tavitz Chaim, really uses it to say anything said in front of, that when the Gemara says anything said in front of three is mutter, it only means ambiguous statements. Right, and he uses this Tosfos. The Shinigretz Kubetzit says that Tosfos never said it about statements said in front of three, he only said it about statements said to people's faces. Now, why does this matter? Why would it matter which one he says? The reason is that Tosfos' understanding is impossible. It's an utterly, utterly implausible reading of the Gemara. Here's why. If you take a look at the next source, the Gemara Bava Basra, Gemara Bava Basra says the following: Rafi Bar Abba Amar Rabbi Yochanan Machal Bifnei Shnayim, Rabbi Yehoshua Amar Rabbi Yochanan Machal Bifnei Shloshim. Okay, so the issue is as follows. There is a the rule in Halakha is that if you sell, right, if you buy land from somebody, you are obligated to maintain your deed for 3 years. But if somebody squats on land that you claim to own for 3 years, and you have never objected to their, right, to their being there, and you cannot produce documentation of your continued ownership. And how you do that? I mean, proof of continued ownership is hard. Buyer ownership is easy. And so basically, the bottom line rule is: if somebody else lives on your land, I guess unless you can produce a lease or something of the sort, then you have to object within 3 years of them moving in, or they are presumed to have bought it from you.
Assuming they claim it.
And it's an evidentiary principle, not an adverse possession rule. It's not because they were there for 3 years without objection, now they own it, it's that they can now make a claim that they actually bought it from you. So the question is, how do you, this sets up a trap for buyers, right? That what you do is, You wait 3 years. People haven't read. Listen, you sell. I sell my house to Elliot. Okay. Now I had Elliot notice that if he's on the land for 3 years without objection from me, then he doesn't have to worry about my suing afterwards. So Elliot happily keeps his contract for 3 years, and after that, you know, it goes in the file of the tax returns from 12 years ago, and eventually gets thrown out by his wife someday. cleaning out the basement. Meanwhile, I have walked down into the basement of my new house, turned on a tape recorder, and said, you know, somewhere like the day after I sold him, I said, the date is X and X, I want you to know that Elliot Dine is living in my house illegally. I record the CBS Evening News saying what date it is, and then 12 years later, when I'm reasonably sure Elliot has lost the contract, I come and say, look, you see, I objected on the first date. Not good enough. I have to make my objection in some kind of more public fashion. So the Gemara records a debate about whether Rabbi Yochanan said that I only have to say it in front of two people who are witnesses, or I have to say it in front of three people, not a Beit Din, but any group of three people. The Gemara says maybe they're arguing about Rabbi Baruch Huna, because Rabbi Baruch Huna said anything said in front of three people is not Lashon Hara. So the person who says you need three people holds like Rabbi Baruch Huna, and the person who says you need two thinks you only need two people to avoid Lashon Hara. Now, now the context of the statement seems to be that when I state Elliot Dine is living on my land illegally, that should be Lashon Hara.
I'm not sure that's why they're doing that.
Well, tell me how you understand the connection, okay? We'll do it the negative way, okay? Here's the argument the way it is set up according to Tosafot. How many witnesses do you have to object to somebody spotting your land illegally in front of? Three, because anything said in front of three. As long as you make a statement which could be ambiguously understood as Lashon Hara or not, it is not Lashon Hara. So what's the connection? Yeah.
I don't know if this book is supposed to be the connection in Baba Vatra.
Yeah.
It's because the whole concept that you make a little bit fun of works is based on Chavre Chavre Isle.
That's right. But Chavre Chavre Isle can't mean, right, an ambiguous statement. What does that have to do with anything? Right, you're entirely right. Right, that the statement is my tamra chavra chavrisla. But how can that relate to a claim? For that matter, the truth is that Tosafot's understanding doesn't fit with that line at all. How does having lots of friends relate to relate to ambiguity? Okay, yes, David, what do you want to say?
So I think although it's an interesting read, in Ramash, I don't think you have to read it that way. It's talking about whether or not the Mecha would be Lashon Hara. It could simply, like Eli was saying, it's about the Chavra, the Chavra, the Chavra, the principle that we need the Mecha to be able to get back to the Machzik, and we're simply giving an analogous Machloket of how many people do we assume. Do we assume halachically something has to be said in front of it before we can assume the whole world will hear it? Which works with Tosfot
on
the assumption that if I know the whole world is going to hear something, I'm going to be more careful about saying something negative.
Uh-huh. Okay.
I'm confused.
Can try that. Right. You want to argue that it's right that the statement. Is right, that it's based on both the statement that it's not Lashon Hara and the statement that it's a Mecha are both based on the presumption that this will be public.
Yeah.
But if I say something horrible to three people, it's clearly Lashon Hara.
Right. If it's obviously bad, so then I don't need this text. But if it's ambiguous, so the fact that I'm trying to hide it is evidence, and only telling it, like whispering it to one person, that's evidence that I think this is something that is really bad. If I think it's something that's really bad, I shouldn't be saying it. But if I'm okay with the whole world doing it, it's probably not something all that bad.
Mm-hmm. Okay, you have to put in some steps.
In Tosfot, not the Gemara.
Right,
if you did the Gemara of Chava Ile being the connection, is fine. But how did Tosfot understand that?
Okay, I think it takes a few steps. Okay, let's take a look at the second thing we put aside, the drama. Ram Hilchotea says the following: Echad ha-misacher b'lashon ha-rab b'fnei chavero or shlo b'fanav. There's no difference in saying lashon ha-rab to someone's face or not. Ha-misacher dvarim shegorim nishu ishti p'nishla z'chavero v'gufu m'mono v'afilo atzer lo l'atpido ha-reza lashon ha-rab. Anybody who says things that will cause anybody damage or stress, even physical damage, financial damage, stress, this is lashon ha-rab. They never dor me'elu b'fnei shlosha for nishpa adar v'nodah. But if these matters have been said before three, the matter is already fully known. And so if one of those three people comes and says it themselves to somebody else, that is not Lashon Hara. So long as he has no intention of spreading the news further. Okay. Now, Raman has two moves here. A, he says that when we say things are not Lashon Hara said before three, it doesn't mean it wasn't Lashon Hara to say it in front of three. It only means it's not Lashon Hara for someone else, for one of the three to repeat it. Now that, we'll have to figure out whether that's a plausible reading or not. And then he says, and it's only permitted to repeat it so long as they have no intention of actually adding to anyone else's information by repeating it. Those three people can repeat it on the assumption that anyone they are telling it to already knows it.
So they can tell it to each other.
They can tell the whole world, because your friend is a friend isn't your friend, and your friend's friend is a friend. So they're allowed to take it on the presumption that they're not actually spreading any news. Right? Well, yeah, so this raises the whole question of whether you build off on the presumption that other people are evil.
I don't know if I phrase it that way, but there is halakhic principles based on a given whole topic.
You need to make an assumption.
It's important. For example, if your whole is going to be created,
sure,
that's necessary for it. So, I mean, yeah, you can always do it according to what you presented, but yeah, you can say that the Lashon Hara.
But that's on the presumption that people are going to do
mutter. Right, so Lashon Hara becomes
this
mutter.
This is on the presumption that people are going to do usher speech.
Right, Lashon Hara becomes mutter because people will do it even though it's usher. Right, so
Barishi asking?
There are three of us. Right, there are three of us. Right, let's say myself, Mr. Schaft, and Roy. And somebody comes up and tells us something nasty about David. So I say to myself, well, you know what? David Schaft, Roy, one of them's gonna have told Yair. I'll go tell Yair. And David will tell himself, well, you know, I clap for Roy, one of them's gonna have told Yedidia. So then David goes tell Yedidia. Right, that wasn't that what Gora was saying? But that's a cheap tactic. Right. Wrong, this is wrong. Now we have the same issue with the David. Right? Same kind of issue, right? Whether if you interpret the Gemara as saying that this Naiver is only forbidden so long as you are the only person who could have helped him do it, right? So it's only forbidden for me to give wine to a Nazir on the presumption no one else could have given the wine to a Nazir. But if there are two of us on one side of the river, the Nazir is on the other side of the river, the Nazir says, please pass me a cup of wine, so I can do it because my friend here would pass it to him otherwise, and, right, because he's a bum, right? And he can do it because I would pass it to him otherwise, because he's a bum. Now, neither of us are bums, because we would both be bums. Right? We might pass it that way, but it's disturbing. Doesn't disturb it.
You're asking me.
Yeah.
Oh. I mean, I guess, when I initially learned the source certificate, the source only covers one. Right. So I'd already.
I didn't want to take it.
But I learned that initially.
Yeah.
I remember bringing that up in Shiur about, well, why is it? It's interesting that in some cases it's considered to be totally normally, like that we rely on the colon on everything's worth, and in other situations it's, oh no, you're not allowed to speak.
Absolutely the right question.
But we just sort of like pick and choose as to when it's going to be okay, and like whether or not like the Shonara today has like a negative connotation.
Yep.
But in actuality, if anytime you're looking at Egypt, and you know, like we talked earlier, which comes up a lot in other Masechtot, that of what I found seems to be dummy, and can you create a shtar, and if you have a shtar that was burned, can you recreate it? And all of this is based on some form of testimony, which is based on someone talking about, I saw something happen. You can argue over seeing whatever the incident happened, of whether or not it's a positive thing or a negative thing, but that's all subjective. Maybe, like, the case of Gamara, where the funny case where you say, where you have the two people and the wife, and, like, one person says, oh, this is my wife and this is my slave, that whole thing, and then they say, oh, no, well, that's my wife, and then the other guy's the slave, and you say, well, do you really believe? But there's all these situations where it's not clear.
Sure. I agree.
So it's not, I don't know, I guess, right, so Palestine, do people actually, I guess, yeah, people actually buy into it, but, like, it just doesn't seem to be...
We can make a presumption that it's not, that people don't really do it. The Raven seems to learn really straight that this is in fact what happens, that any three people can assume that one of the other two is my real child. It's the law or in the picture.
But then can you fully, I mean, this is what I ended up bringing up in class, is, well, then can anyone fully ever, as this, using this as an example, can anyone ever fully fulfill, like, all of halakha? Because by doing one thing that you're supposed to do, you're bringing another.
Well, then I segue. I'm not breaking it because, right? But now we come to make it legal. We cause everyone else to break it, therefore it's legal for you to break off a presumption that they would. But no one violates anything. We're all happy.
Except the person being
talked
about.
Right. Yeah. But maybe they want it. Maybe they want the code that I'm divorced and I want everyone to know, so that now I'm someone who I'm going to find.
Right. So if you work close enough on the presumption, the goal is to prevent information from getting out, then this doesn't seem very effective. So that's part of the issue we have to talk about, is the goal of Lashon Hara to create, as a, you know, we're not going to the goal of Lashon Hara for everyone to have a wholly inaccurate perception of other people. Right? That's the Redacted Absurdo. That really, that's the goal. You know, for no one ever knows the truth about anybody. We should all look upon each other with complete naivete.
But we rely on it. Like, for making that situation, in order for that to
that's
get
right.
there.
That's right. So I don't think it can be true.
Right.
So I think this is Redacted Absurdo. That's why I don't like this reading. Okay, yes, sir.
I don't understand how the Ramban got
Google. Yep.
Like, how could he read that and say that the person who says the Lashon Hara to the people or not is so
well, because he said the Gemara never how could you possibly believe? Okay. His plan is right. How could you possibly believe that saying nasty things to three people is better than saying them to one? No, he read the Rambam. He read the Gemara, and he said, with the eyes of the Chofetz Chaim, and said, this is impossible.
That's
true. The Gemara didn't say it, but what else did the Gemara mean?
It should say, the people are not Chofetz Chaim.
Well, you know what?
I know the Gemara is starting to work, like, you know,
all right, but here's a fun thing. Let's take a look at Rabbi Gershom. And then again, right next to it, Rabbi Gershom says, "Kol milsim is al rabba apet lasa shehadaf harish on amr b'snei gimel." That first person said in front of three. Im chazar v'sipre echad mehem ain bo mishum lashon hara. If one of them repeats it, it doesn't have lashon hara. So guess what? The Rambam didn't make it up. In Ashkenaz, they have the exact same reading.
It's a reading that makes sense of chazar chazar either. Otherwise. You're allowed to tell three people because then all the world will know.
You didn't finish reading
your
question.
I know.
You're cheating.
Deliberately so. Why don't you tell me with? Yeah, you want to say the same thing?
I was going to say
the same thing. Yeah. So why is it cheating not to read the other reading your question?
Well, the way you were reading the Rambam,
yeah,
it seemed as though somebody was spreading Lashon Hara to three people, whereas reading your question seems to be implying that the Nidon himself. Told three people.
Oh, you think that's what he did? That he himself told three people?
Ain't no choshesh before some of the bar. I have such a terrible thing that I do, or that I have. I told three people. And I'm not choshesh that it's going to be in it for some.
Uh-huh.
It doesn't bother you.
It doesn't bother
you. That's how you think it means. Okay, so let me ask you a question to follow up. Let's suppose, I think it's a plausible argument that when you have two consecutive statements in the Gemara, each of which begin with the phrase, Kol Mis Amra, and end with the phrase Les Bamishum Lishnabisha, that they mean grammatically the same thing.
So,
So the Gemara has two statements. One is Kol Milson and Misamrit Ape Mura, which is Shumus Mishnevisha. And the other one is Kol Milson and Misamrit Ape Tlasa, is less than Shumus Mishnevisha. So now, let's take your reading. So any the first, so that if the correct meaning of the statement, anything said before three is not Lashon Hara, now means anything that the subject says in front of three can be repeated by those three. So the meaning of the second statement is anything that somebody says in front of himself.
Well, that's only to assume that, I mean, if we, the Rambam seems to be applying my reading also.
Rambam does seem to be applying your reading also, yeah.
The grammar. Echadam is sepel v'loshon av, v'necha v'loshon av, v'fanav, but then he said, v'im ne'emru ha'dvarim elu, in the nifal, v'im ne'emru.
Yeah, ne'emru, so this...
Ne'emru, I don't know who said them, that probably didn't be done. And that doesn't...
Whoa, 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 whoa,
whoa, whoa, whoa,
whoa, whoa, whoa, whoa, whoa, whoa, whoa, whoa, whoa, whoa, whoa,
Well, no, but the deen is talking about the person. The halacha itself at the beginning is talking about the person who is usher for whom it's usher.
No, let's be. The Rebbe Gershom and the Rambam disagree. That's much more straightforward because according to Rebbe Gershom, the point is you can tell it to anybody because the person who said it originally doesn't care if you tell it.
Right.
And according to the Rambam, right, you can only tell it because you assume that you're not doing any additional damage by retelling it if everybody already knows. Those are two very different logical arguments.
I agree.
Why does it matter?
That's an excellent question also.
Depends on what your point of Lashon Hara is.
Well, that depends on who the person originally said it is. Well, that's what Reuter suggested. I'm pointing out, but then how do you take the first thing? Anything a person says in front of himself? That doesn't work at all.
Who's in a
can have more than one.
Very good, all very good questions. Mark, what do you want to say?
Well, I mean, the purpose of the first person is to destroy someone else's reputation.
Yeah.
That's the perfect way to do it. Because then it exponentially increases. Those three tell three people. Those three
right.
Tell three. And before you know it, everybody knows it.
That's right. This doesn't seem like a very good plan if you care about preventing negative speech about people.
So I don't understand what the context is, because if you're talking about Lashon Hara that is destroying people's reputation, and someone's trying to do that purposely or not purposely, this is exactly the way you do it.
Yeah. So I guess that's really like a very strange thing, right?
Yeah,
that was a very strange reading, and Gershom was just a very strange idea. So I want to suggest, just for now, actually, that what Gershom reads it as is that you're allowed to tell the original person that this person said Lashon Hara about them. Because he doesn't care. Since he said it to three of you, he knows that one of you is going to get back to him.
Uh-huh.
And that is the analogy of Baba Basra, right, where the whole point is you say, even if you try to keep your objection to the person staying in the land secret, if you tell three people, I said so-and-so's squatting, I know that one of them is going to get back to him. And so it's like telling it to him directly. So that, I think, is what Rabbi Gershom's read is. But it also doesn't make any sense with the line, anything said in front of the person.
Well, but Rabbi Gershom, it doesn't have to be up to that level of gamma that you propose.
Uh-huh. Well, okay. So let me, yes, David.
They're not the same thing. Saying it in front of three people, someone is certainly going to say it to the victim, whatever you want to call it.
It's just an extension.
It's
good.
So maybe in fact, it's
I guess it makes perfect sense.
If you're willing to be that much of a then you can't stop it.
Good. So I guess it makes perfect sense. The Rambam doesn't. Right. So here's what drove Rabbi Gershom and the Rambam to read. But all of you were kind of puzzled with the notion that means any of the three can repeat it, right? What could possibly have driven somebody to this impression that, because I say anything in front of three people, I would have thought that meant it was okay to say it.
The last line throws you off for that read.
Well, more than that, let's take a look at what drives them is the end of the Sugyan Arafim.
Yeah.
The end of the Sugyan Arafim says, Amar Avanani Bar Sesson, not the one line you're thinking of. Next verse. Amar Avanani Bar Sesson. Ve'il nechaper lashon hara, amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu yavo devar shebekol, nechaper al maaseh hakol. So ve'il, which has these bells on it, and so all, this is a Gemara that sets out that every garment of the Kohen Gadol Yom Kippur atones for a different sin. I'm not going to talk about what atonement means here. And so the Gemara is trying to line them up, so it turns out the ve'il, which has little bells hanging on it, that atones for the sin of lashon hara, which is telling the bekol. Really very good. But the Gemara then says, there's another braita, in which Tana of Rabbi Shmuel says that the Ketoret, meaning the Ketoret brought in the Kodesh Kodeshim by the Kohen Gadol Yom Kippur, atones for, guess what, Lashon Hara. Why? Because Yehuda Varsha B'Chashad, the Kapir Al-Devarsha B'Chashad, there's a secret, private matter, whispered thing, they're telling me something that's secret, private, and whispered. So Gemara says, well, first of all, we need a one-to-one correspondence between atonements and sins. Can't have two atonements for one sin. I read that. That's redundancy. That makes it, right? Why is the coin going to be so hot? You could wear fewer clothes. If they were just... And secondly, what is this Lashon Hara? Is this Lashon Hara the Marsha Bekol? Or is it the Marsha Bekashai? So Gemara comes with a very simple solution. Habit Sina, Habit Farhesia. There are two kinds of Lashon Hara. One of them is private and one of them is public. Uh-oh. Public Lashon Hara. But the Gemara just said, anything said in front of three people is mutter. Right, so that's what drives the Rambam and Rabbeinu Gershom. How can there be a state of the Gemara which says that anything said in front of three people is mutter? When the Gemara says 10 lines later that there is that the Me'il comes to atone for Lashon Hara said in public. Obviously, there is such a thing as Lashon Hara said in public. Right, it's actually that's what drives all three of them. Right, so Tosfos says there is Lashon Hara said in public, and this statement is talking about a particular kind of statement. And the Rambam and Rabbeinu Gershom both say it's not okay to say it in public; it's just okay to repeat it once it has been said in public. Okay, but both of their readings, however, right, don't seem to square, right, none of those readings, except for Rabbeinu Gershom possibly, seem to square well with the parallelism between that line and the line in, right, and the line anything said to a person's face. And only Rabbeinu Gershom really works, really works well that way. But Kavitz Chaim doesn't quote Rabbeinu Gershom. That wouldn't have Rabbeinu Gershom. Because he might have, should have a side of Basra, but it may only read Marashi Tosfos.
And in the old edition, it's completely unreadable.
Yeah, it's really hard. I don't think yet. Okay. Let's talk about other possible theories of Lashon Hara. So here's the Shilta Terav Achai, which is a Gaonic work. It may be a Gaonic work that somehow is a later version, a popularized version of the Talmud, or maybe a proto-Talmud, depending on which scholars you follow. The prevailing theory is in some form or another it is a record of the oral lectures delivered by the head of the Gaonic Yeshiva on Shabbos afternoon. But here's the question. Shilta, the Asur Lahon to the race Israel, the Ishtu Elish Nabishna Tal al Chapra. You're not allowed to say Lashon Hara about each other. Okay, Jerome, however, sorry, if you still need to ask the question. Yilu Hecha, the Amri, the Milsa, Kame Beit Kwasa. Anytime you said something, but something was said in front of three, Mahu, Lemezo, Lememri, Le Lamare, Olafrine. So he asked the question both ways. Right, both have been in Gershom's way and the Rambam's way. If something was said in front of three, what's the halacha mahu to go tell it either to the person it's about, right? Or which obviously means not telling the thing because you don't, right? The person doesn't need to hear Lashon Hara about themselves, but to say that somebody said this about you, or lachrini, or to repeat it to other people. That someone said, you know, that A said this about B. So Gemara says, came in Amar Mar, since we had a previous braita which said, Ad Shio Mar Valeh Emor, that you're not allowed, right, you're not allowed to reveal something somebody told you, unless you were explicitly told, go say it to somebody else. Right, anything I tell you, you're not allowed to repeat unless I explicitly give you permission. So, Beit Kwasaname, if I say it in front of three people, came in Amar Valeh Emor, since even if I say it to all three of you, if I say it to this whole room together, unless I say, and you can quote me, you're not allowed to quote me. Or we might say, no. Odil mahani mila kitzorek lehner, lelech v'emor, teshu l'omer kame bein plasa. Right? Maybe it's only if I didn't say it to a whole room. If I said it to only one person, then you have to assume confidentiality. But anything I say in front of three people, there's no presumption of confidentiality. Okay, so the shilta, right, the shilta says, it's a tashma, damar rabar rabuna, Kol milsa v'rizam rabak bit plasa ain bo mishum lishna bisha ki azal v'omer leilam lamare dehavi le ki farhesia. Okay, so the right, so the shilta says that the whole issue is confidentiality. Right, also is unrelated. Right, the term lishna bisha, as said by Rabbi Baruch Huna, is not related to saying negative things about people. It's just related to breaching confidence. Anything said in front of three people is right. Rabbi Baruch Huna said there is no presumption of confidence, and you can go repeat it to whomever you want. And if you need to draw that explicitly, you can take a look at the next source, which is the Sefer HaShlamah, He says, Amar Rav Bar Huna, from Milton is Amar Rav Pitvasa, left of Mishum Mishna Pisha, Mifarish Tamek the Arachim, because your friend's friend is a friend, the Yesh Mishum Gibli Sod, right, and the other, otherwise, if you look at the way that I construct, otherwise, there would be a problem revealing secrets. So this is a whole radical reassessment of what the term Lashon Hara means. The term Lashon Hara is, entirely about breaching confidences, but there's no, ban whatsoever, so far as we can tell, on repeating things that you know to be true, that people told you, with intent, with giving you a right to repeat. Yes.
I just don't understand. Right down at the bottom of the page where it says in the Shilta, it
yes.
says that. When you say it to the male,
to the subject,
meaning what?
If I go right, if right, he says anything, Yair tells me something nasty about you,
right?
I'm not allowed to tell you about it.
Why? That's
but
what I
understood. Right, if Yair says something nasty about you to me, Yedidya and Ron, then we can come tell you about it because Yair isn't worried about your finding out. It's not Lashon Hara because Yair wouldn't have said it.
It's not Lashon Hara if you repeat it to me,
yes.
And I'm the subject.
Right.
But if you repeat it to someone else, it is Lashon Hara.
Repeat it to somebody else we don't know. Nobody talked about that.
Well, that's what I'm saying, is that here it implies that if you say it to the subject, it's not Lashon Hara, but if you say it to someone else, then it
would
be.
Why would it be Lashon Hara?
Aha.
It would only be Lashon Hara because it's revealing a secret.
Yeah. No, I hear that. In other words, the Gemara itself, there seems to be a difference where in the Gemara itself, it says, if it's said in front of three people, while I can point it out, the Rambam and the Ben Gershon, twist that a little bit, if you will, and say, if one of those three...
That's right.
Yeah.
And the Shildas agrees that it's one of those three people. But in order to accomplish that, he says the issue isn't what we call Lashon Hara at all. The issue is just you're finding out that Yair said something. But right, but he doesn't raise the issue at all that I shouldn't be saying nasty things about Yair saying Lashon Hara. He doesn't say anything about Yair having said Lashon Hara. The only issue is secrets, nothing else. And the Sefer HaShlam is explicit. Right? The whole issue is Gilui Sod. That's what Lishna Bisha means. Less Gilui Mishum Lishna Bisha means that if not Lashon Hara, as long as there's no issue of confidentiality. Yes, Kat.
So as far as this being in front of three people, would you argue that it has to be in front of three people of the tribe, or do you think you somehow knowing that this person A said something to person B, C, and D, but at separate times?
Excellent question.
Can you lead staff different forms of eduks?
Excellent question. That's a psychological question. Right? Do we believe that if you tell three people sequentially, that you also don't care about confidentiality, and I don't know the answer to that. That's not a textual question, it's a psychological question. I don't know. I raised the same question last year.
I mean, there are parts in the Gemara where it'll talk about mixing...
Yeah, there are.
Sure.
I don't think that's right. I think this is just a psychological question. The question is, when does the presumption of confidentiality end? Right, and that's a real question. When do people? If I say it in front of three people, right, we have an assertion. Three people together, I know that you give up any hope of confidentiality. But if I call on three people one by one and say this is a secret, is it just that we assume that nobody keeps secrets more than 2/3 of the time, or is it that we assume that each of you has to know the other one knows it, and you don't believe the others will keep secrets, or is there something psychologically about the experience of being told that three people? I don't know which one. Yes, sir.
So the Shilta says that the possibility that you have a group that's told something, that the presumption is that it's not intended to be confidential.
Mm-hmm.
Does that leave open the possibility that you could instruct that it be confidential and it would go back to being the other category?
Excellent question. That is absolutely discussed also. And it depends. Again, it's a psychological question. Do we believe that people expect when they instruct confidentiality that they listen to? I don't know. This may be a socially dependent halakha. Or it may be that in society where confidentiality is an important principle, that's fine. It may depend on context, right? Let's say, if you tell three doctors, right, three doctors about something at a very, at a meeting together, so they're bound by professional confidentiality, so three people isn't enough. Right? It might be that disseminating on the internet is enough, even if you haven't, right, even if you haven't told anybody directly. And those are all practical questions. They don't change the theory. Okay, that's it. Then we have one more theory. This is the Iranian. The Iranians are Lazar Mimitz, he's one of the early Josephists. So he says the following. On the mitzvah, he has a mitzvah list whose organization is created. So this is under the mitzvah of Rachil Lo Teleh. He says, according to the person, after discussing the many, many other prohibitions that fall under Rachil Lo Teleh, he says, and according to the person who says that this is the source for Motzi Shemra, I have to write what the Chachamim wrote in Arachim. Okay, so note again, by the way, that nobody has the Rambam's neat scheme in which Motzi Shemra is false and Lashon Hara is true. Nobody has that. Right, that's entirely a formal creation of the Rambam, but so far as I can tell, no precedent whatsoever. That was the distinction between slander and true definition. Okay, Rachil, let's say that. Right, so he quotes the sugya, and here's his reading of the Avtam of the sugya. Rava said anything said in front of three is not Lashon Hara, because Rava holds like Rav Yossi, the last two lines, the Talmud of Rav Yossi, and the whole rationale of Rav Yossi, Holte Rachil Nechoshet of Brazil, he connects the verse Rachil Lo Teleh to the verse Holte Rachil Nechoshet of Brazil, those who go as Rachilim, copper and brass, whatever that means. Here's what it means. Hirish, Sheomer Atzma Ohavo, that he says that he loves the person. But really, he hates him to say bad things not to his face. So it seems like he's copper and brass. Now, if I had to imply two radically opposite things, I would not have used Nechoshet and Barzel as my polar opposites. But I'm going to grant the Iranian is image. So according to the Iranian, the statement when Rava says anything said in front of three is not lashon hara. The answer for that, the reason for that is that anything said in front of three is public, and anything public will get back to the person I'm speaking about. And as long as I intend what I say to get back to the person telling about, I'm not creating a false impression, and that's fine. The only thing that is forbidden are anonymous blog posts, because anonymous blog posts allow people to create the impression of friendship while in fact knocking people down. But we want an honest society. If I think you're a bum, I can say you're a bum. I can say you're a bum to you. I can say you're a bum to everyone else also, because everyone else should know you're a bum. I just can't do that without, if I don't want you to find out I'm saying that. Right? Because that's cowardice. That leads to secret attacks. All right. Three completely different visions of Rishonim, all of which are translations of the term Lishna Bisha, in the primary sugya about Lashon Hara. Right, we have the one that Chafetz Chaim adopts that becomes famous, which is that Lashon Hara is in any way saying something negative about anybody, but unless it has a very clearly defined positive purpose. You have the scheme adopted by the Shi'ultot, which is that Lashon Hara is a breach of confidence, and the issue of how to regulate information on other people may be a function of something else entirely. It may be an issue of Onat Varim, right? It may just be a measure, right? It may be issue of damages and not organized this way at all. And then you have the scheme where the goal is not to prevent negative information, the goal is for everyone to know exactly what other people think about them. Right? So it's Lashon Hara to say nasty things about people without them knowing you're doing it. Alright. Now how did this come about? Why do these people have all these weird pieces of karma? Right, nobody seems to read the Gemara straightforwardly. Except, perhaps, for the Uranium, but really even the Uranium. These are all very... And many of these readings are really hard to square.
What do you mean the Gemara straightforwardly?
Pardon?
What do you mean the Gemara straightforwardly?
Well, let's take... The Gemara says two things. The Gemara says anything you say to a person's face is okay. And it says, right, and it says anything you say in front of three people is okay.
Okay.
It We think the Uraim is a puzzle reason. But your friend has a friend, and your friend's friend has a friend. And therefore the person will hear about it. Okay.
So, reading definition as meaning it's mutter.
Yeah.
But didn't you say there's a later Gemara about Lashon Hara and Farhesi?
There is. But it's, right, the problem is, how did the Uraim read that Gemara?
Anonymously,
could be.
One person at a time.
Could they affect one person at a time from doing it while swearing people to secrecy? All sorts of ways around that. All right, so one is the major thing I want to get out in this year is this notion that really there are, at least among the Rishonim, there's a broad array of statements of visions of Lashon Hara. And it's not entirely clear what Kodesh Chaim Paskamas Kolaposkin is in fact Paskamas Kolaposkin. But that's the end of the forest. Let's try and talk about where these came from. So first of all, Yisrael should have noted that Rambam did something even stranger than we read in the last week. So let's look at the first line of the Rambam. Lashon Hara b'fnei chaviro shlo lefanav. It makes no difference whether you say Lashon Hara to his face or not. Milton is Amrei Ba'abe Mara. How do you do that? And he's like, fine, he reinterpreted the line anything said in front of three, so he reinterpreted that out of existence. But what happened to the line anything said to the person's face is what?
He holds like the Cholik.
Nobody has ever suggested, there's no counter position, nobody has ever suggested we don't paskin like any of these lines.
Well, no, because right was Amar Le, right? I don't know. Chutzpah Vilishna Mishnah.
No, that's before.
Right.
That's before.
Right, who says we paskin like Rabbo or Abai?
Who says we paskin like Rabbo when he says Kol Milson is Amar Le? Because he quotes Rav Yossi.
He says I hold like Rav Yossi. That implies there's another position out there.
Good. Very nice. So far, Rabbo could have done that. He never explained it to you.
Does Rabbo ever explain his?
No, he doesn't. So if nobody else ever considered the possibility.
We always postulate halachic rabba. Non-halachic statement.
If this is rabba halachic rabba, if this is rabba halachic basarai, is a baye.
No,
it's halachic rabba.
It's talmidei rabba.
Yeah,
that's
so good.
Okay.
Bar.
It's missing.
It's a cross between 10 and 15.
It's a homeo teleuton.
You have a different manda amma, but basically line 15.
It's a scribal. It's a scribal error where he skips from an amma rava down to the next part.
Amar le abaye. Kol shekhen kos the lishna bisha.
Now we're back. Now we're back in 11.
Now we're back in line 11. Amar le anok Rav Yossi sirled Amar Rav Yossi.
Yeah, 11, 12.
Yeah, so what happens is the Arayim clearly The rain clearly did not have the line. So Milson is Amrit Ape Mara is Gemara. So it seems, or at least seems. Right? But the Rambam explicitly has Rabbi Yossi supporting the position in front of three as what right instead of the position in front of your face. That's why the Rambam says that all that matters is saying it to your face. Because otherwise, what's the connection between saying it from the three and Rabbi Yossi's position? I never turn around to see who I said. Okay, so right, the reason the Rambam reads the Gemara the way he does, right, is because he explicitly connects it. So now let's take a look on the last page. Right, so I have given you the text in Vedekim 119. That's the 9th of the Talmud. You notice in Vedekim 119, aside from the fact that lines 6 through 8 are missing, but look at line 10. Tel Milson and Misamra Dafe Plasa, let's spell the Nishim Lishna Bisho. Okay. If you look at many of the manuscripts of this sukkah, you will know that this writes that there is, that it's all. Any sugya which has two identical lines following each other, it's hard to keep it right. It's really hard to keep it right. And what happens is you have a phenomenon, which I guess is not how much later time, which is when you have the same endings of lines but the same beginnings of lines. Scribes often skip. They skip down, they skip up. I think that, here's one manuscript that you can show. I can show you a whole bunch of manuscripts, and I can show you, I think, the Farish Mishnah. That there were, I think that's what happened in Tosfos also, which the Chidim Kibetzer didn't get, is that there were many, many manuscripts in which the line, Kol Milson Misamra Ba'ape Mara, simply didn't appear. The only line that appeared was Kol Milson Misamra Ba'ape Plasa. Sometimes that happened, in some versions that happened by skipping, let's go back to page one, some versions that happened by skipping line 9 through 13 period. And in some manuscripts it happened by turning line 10 into line 15. In the Iranian manuscript, line 10 turned into line 15.
You're defining everything as how it has changed from our manuscript. It says upper right.
That is true, but
it's always a problem with textual criticism.
Right, it's the line Kol Milson Misamra Ape Mara doesn't exist anywhere else. So I think it is possible to have versions in which the line about Ape Plasa doesn't exist as copied from Baba Basra. But the notion that Ape Mara shows up by itself, unless it's a back formation in front of Yossi, right, not so easy. But I don't need to. There are a set of manuscripts. Right, and there are at least three ways a manuscript can develop. One way is the text we have now in Vilna, which has both. One way is the text in the Iranian, which has only Bapet Plasa, but retains the line, right, of that I pass on to Yossi. And one is what I suggest is the manuscript of both Tosfos and Rambam, which has only the line Kol Milson Misamra Bapet Plasa and doesn't have the line Kol Milson Misamra Bapet Mara at all. That's how the Rambam cannot pass on, like, it doesn't have it. It's how Tosfos can say that in the case before three is talking exactly about the immediately preceding issue of Nura Bay Planning. But he has no intervening sugar. We're looking at the skeptic.
If Rambam explicitly goes out of his way to say it doesn't matter what you say on the first one, so you get both here, so he's choosing.
And he's choosing one.
He was known to do that, yeah.
It's not passing against the memory, it's passing against the version of the sugya. Could be. I can't tell you.
It makes a lot of sense.
I can't tell you otherwise. Okay, so I want to suggest that the different versions are functions of different manuscripts. Now, it turns out that the manuscript, I suggest that Ezra points out in Vilna Centric that in fact the Vilna Shas is early right in this case. But as it happens, none of the shukta that we addressed has the Vilna Shas. Perhaps the most correct verse of it is not the Gersa of Hanging and Shine. That raises really interesting questions in terms of Sakhala.
Why do you say none of the shukta that we addressed have the Vilna Shas?
Well, the Raman doesn't, Tosfos doesn't, the Iran doesn't.
Why do we assume Tosfos didn't?
Because Tosfos, the text we have, begins with Ape Plasa, and only makes this comment that it's talking about Nurabe Planya. Andape Plasa. He should have said Andape Mara.
We do have someone.
In the Shita Mekubetzet, Girsa is right, and he does. Right? But if we had our Girsa, it does fit. Right? Then Tosa doesn't have it either. And it's hard to tell you how can you, how do you understand anything said in front of the person less than from Gilei Soa to whom? You already said it to him.
But
hard.
We do have someone who has a Vilna Shas and Tanya Tsang has six of them.
Ah, yes. We have the
I could go earlier.
The time does it. Through the eyes of all these interpretations.
Okay, but clearly
the Shari Chuba has the Vilna Shas is Kirsten also.
The Bene Yona.
Yes,
we will get there. I didn't do a Bene Yona. I should point out also there is a Ritva who takes the position that the phrase Tolmilsa's Amriyape Plasa means different things in Bava Basra than it does in Arapin, and there's no reason you have to reconcile the two languages. There's an Echad Mihal Lashonot in Kalfa of the Talmud. This is one of the places where the words mean different things in different places. He has a list. Alright, but I want to suggest that the most likely reading is that what you have is a variety of positions, all of which arise from text different from what we have. And the question is, how does that affect halacha? Possibly not at all. Possibly it opens up room for thinking about lashon hara differently than other kinds did. At least it may open up some understanding of what drives the Chofetz Chaim, which is so. What we're going to do next week is we will look at Rabbeinu Yonah, David Kitzasov, who is the real source of the Chofetz Chaim. And we also, I hope we will have time to also look at two Tshuva Rav Moshe, which I think are a very important relationship, stand in a very important relationship to Rabbeinu Yonah, and that will give us some sense of closure. So tonight, just for those of you who are very intellectuals and really just like learning this stuff, I think I've been blistering the entire time, so today we could just have some mother's fun. But we'll see next week when mother's fun actually matters.
Yeah.